therefore, you must be in full sympathy with the...
Well, yes, the British have accepted and found a permanent service satisfactory. The Labour government came into power and appointed advisors in many of their most sensitive ministries, from the universities, from the party and elsewhere. The Americans, is a matter of policy. In the making of policy and the execution of policy, the top echelons are given to persons who are in active sympathy with the government in power. Kennedy selects his team, Johnson selects his team of policy makers and persons who execute policy. There is scope for discussion. But in Ceylon there isn't such a wide reservoir of talent available for that selection, and in the top positions there isn't that high degree of mobility. Well, to some extent, for instance, the appointment of Mr. Anand Alvis. Government has tried the experiment in the appointment of Mr. David Karnataka as press relations officer of the Prime Minister. The government is trying the experiment. I think, you know, we are too young a democracy for us to say these institutions are the final mold. We got to experiment and see what produces results. Certainly, the institutions we've adopted have not produced satisfactory results for the country.
If I may switch to another subject, I'm interested in your views on the Donimo Constitution and the Executive Committee system.
I worked fairly intimately with the Donimo Constitution and the Exco system in very early years of my career. I was Assistant Secretary and actually functioned as Secretary to the Ministry of Health with old Mr. W. De Silva's minister. The way Mr. W. De Silva worked his executive committee, it played very little part either in policy making or in execution of policy. The executive committee was most interested in appointments. I think it would be worthwhile your recording what Mr. W. De Silva. Exco met once a week. We prepared a comprehensive agenda. We circulated documentation. And for 2 years I kept the minutes of the Exco. I drafted the minutes in advance because the minister told me the entire agenda is approved unless you're informed to the contrary. We met at 8:30 in the morning, and then the minister came and started the gossip on the leading topic of the morning papers. What a way, maybe. And then the Exco discussed it, and from there they went to something else, and something else, and at 10:30, the minister said, "Gentlemen, it's now 10:30. Is there anything in the agenda that you're interested in?" There was no appointment papers. They said, "Passed." Got and walked away. That was one executive committee. Mr. W. De Silva was an outstanding personality. I think he deliberately did it. He did not want interference. But there were other executive committees where they worked differently. My personal experience was this.
In other words, he had the complete confidence of the committee, or the committee was not interested in policy making?
You see, the committee was not really interested in policy making. The members of the committee were people who became very eminent people, subsequently ministers of state. There was Mr. Lugavilla, who was chairman of the Public Service Commission, and Minister of Education. There was Mr. George De Silva, who succeeded him as Minister of Health. Mr. Griffith, there was quite a number of persons who practical men, but I think he manipulated the committee nor did he do anything outrageous for them to feel hurt, and health was not a highly controversial subject.
Mm-hmm. You mean if there was an important matter, he had got the concurrence of one or two individuals who might have been interested before the meeting?
No, he never attempted that.
Mm.
He never tried to secure the concurrence of members before the meeting. Only occasion that the committee divided was about the transfer of some doctors from some specialists from outstation to Colombo or Colombo to outstation. The only occasion that there was a division went to a vote in 2.5 years that I was there.
In that sense, then the executive committee certainly did not slow up things or hinder.
No, the executive committee, at least did not make political partisanship so strong. The persons who were constitute the opposition as members of the executive committee knew precisely how the government was functioning, had the right to go into a ministry of which executive committee to which they belonged, or department, and ask for information and get the information, and officials, theoretically, all information had to be obtained through the executive committee. But as members of the executive committee, they met the officials in committee, they came to know them, they walked into their rooms and discussed matters. If there was some question on which they had received representation, they did not hesitate to go and make representation. One of the peculiar features of the parliamentary system as it is evolving now is the opposition, besides asking questions in the House, seldom or never meets the minister to discuss matters relating to their affairs. And it is taken for granted that you would be discriminated against. In that respect, there was less feeling we are the government and they are the opposition under the Dalmo scheme. Again, resources were so limited. Not much economic planning took place.
So, but taking other executive committees, could it be said that in committees where the chairman didn't have the complete support of the other members, the committee system tended to slow down the executive?
Oh yes, decision making. For instance, the Ministry of the Executive Committee of Labour, Perisundaram didn't have the support of his committee. Claude Correa, subsequently, when he was in Industries and Commerce, had all the Marxists with him, but they were able to get on. But where the committees were active, certainly the administration was required to substantiate recommendations that were made, policy recommendations. Documentation was more critically examined. To that extent, the Exco system, looking back, one doesn't get the impression that there appeared a very great activity.
What about compartmentalization due in part to the fact that the Board of Ministers wasn't a collective group like a cabinet? Couldn't ministries work at cross purposes to a greater extent?
The way that Mr. G.S.L. Nair had maneuvered the election of ministers produced really a teeth. I don't think at any stage he had, I think Perisundaram was one, was not his nominee in the first Exco, first Board of Ministers. But thereafter, I think, if they were able to so manipulate the Exco elections that they got their candidate in. So there was...
I was just thinking of Kothalavada putting a spoke in Bandaranaike schemes and things like that.
I recollect that there were personal rivalries, and the leader of the House or Vice Chairman of the Board of Ministers was not as effective an accepted leader. Is true. I remember old Mr. W. De Silva coming back from a Board of Ministers meeting and telling me, I witnessed the most shameful quarrel in the Board of Ministers. I was ashamed to be present. Fishwives would have conducted themselves better. Quarrel between Sir Claude Currer and Bandaranaike. Bandaranaike was local government and Sir Claude Currer was something else. So his comment was that they were the two youngest members of the cabinet, struggled for ultimate leadership 10 years or 20 years hence. They quarrel as individuals. But you know, the concept of cabinet as a people, group of like-minded people who have worked together and instinctively react in a like-minded manner, not something true of Ceylon cabinets. A heterogeneous group of men, circumstances brought them together, whether they were SLP cabinet or MEP cabinet or the UNP cabinet. They were not like-minded people. They were not people who over the years have accepted a basic attitude of mind towards government. So the old Board of Ministers and the present cabinet of the seven parties, or the MEP cabinet of Mr. Bandaranaike or Mrs. Bandaranaike,
SLFP,
well, you know, heterogeneous group of people who got together for...
With reference to the Donohoe Constitution and its committee system and appointments, do you think it was this practice which began political and interference in transfers and appointments? Do you think it encouraged such activity?
No, I think our people, being what we are,
would have anyway.
I would say, by and large, there was less interference in the Donohoe days than today. With the pressure of unemployment becoming what it is, in the Donohoe days it was the top jobs. Now, in the bottom, the peership. Question of loyalty comes up. Loyalty is humbug. It's a question of put my man in. He's a nuisance. So the life of the public servant becomes difficult, but the existence of rules and regulations helps him to ward off. Corporations not having rules and regulations. Well, it's just spoils unashamedly, blatantly proclaimed spoils system, isn't it? But it's sad, because even the young chaps from the university, they say, well, Susan, you've got to have pull of the class you get. But I think the class you get does count even now, but...
Should we go ahead?
Yeah, because I'm
end of interview.